The Infinities by John Banville, read by Julian Rindtut. 1. Of the things we fashioned for them that they might be comforted, dawn is the one that works. When darkness sifts from the air like fine soft soot, and light spreads slowly out of the east, then all but the most wretched of humankind rally. It is a spectacle we immortals enjoy, this minor daily resurrection. Often we will gather at the ramparts of the clouds and gaze down upon them, our little ones, as they bestir themselves to welcome the new day. What a silence falls upon us then, the sad silence of our envy. Many of them sleep on, of course, careless of our cousin Aurora's charming matutinal trick. But there are always the insomniacs, the restless ill, the lovelorn tossing on their solitary beds, or just the early risers, the busy ones, with their knee bends and their cold showers and their fussy little cups of black ambrosia. Yes, all who witness it greet the dawn with joy, more or less. Except, of course, the condemned man, for whom first light will be the last on earth. Here is one, standing at a window in his father's house, watching the day's early glow suffuse the sky above the massed trees beyond the railway line. He is condemned not to death, not yet, but to a life into which he feels he does not properly fit. He is barefoot and wearing pyjamas that his mother, on his arrival last night, found for him somewhere in the house, threadbare cotton, pale blue with a bluer stripe. Whose are they? Whose were they? Could they be his from long ago? If so, it is from very long ago, for he is big now, and they are far too small, and pinch him at the armpits and the fork. But that is the way with everything in this house. Everything pinches and chafes, and makes him feel as if he were a child again. He is reminded of how, when he was a little boy here, his grandmother would dress him up for Christmas, or his birthday, or some other festival, tugging him this way and that, and spitting on a finger to plaster down a stubborn curl, and how he would feel exposed, worse than naked, in those already outmoded, scratchy, short-trousered tweed suits the colour of porridge that the old woman made him wear, and the white shirts with starched collars, and worst of all, the tartan dicky bows that it afforded him a one vindictive pleasure to pull out to the limit of their elastic and let snap back with a pleasingly loud smack when someone was making a speech or singing a song or the priest was holding up the communion wafer, like, he always thought, the nurse on the hospital sweepstakes tickets, brandishing aloft the winning number. That is how it is. Life, tight-buttoned life, fits him ill, making him too much aware of himself and what he glumly takes to be his unalterable littleness of spirit. He hears from somewhere unseen the faint, muffled clopping of small hoofs. It will be the early postman on his pony, in turn and taxi's livery, with his tricorn cap and his post horn looped on his shoulder. The man at the window is called Adam. He is not yet 30. The young son of an elderly father, product, as he once overheard that twice-married father say with a sardonic laugh, of my second coming. Idly he admires the dense, mud-purple shadows under the trees. A kind of smoke hovers ankle-deep on the grey-seeming grass. Everything is different at this hour. An early blackbird flies across at a slant swiftly from somewhere to somewhere else, its lacquered wing catching an angled glint of sunlight, and he cannot but think with a pang of the early worm. He fancies he can hear faintly the fleet-winged creature's piping panic note. Gradually now, he is becoming aware of something he cannot identify.